Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport. Thank you for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined today by Matt Kinnear and Hallie Quillen-Griggs, the editor-in-chief and women's director of Inside Lacrosse, talking about what is a long overdue, but not really that overdue conversation because it's still something that there's so much that we don't know about. But what we do know is that it's really important. The stakes are very high. And the question is there going to be a college lacrosse season in the spring of 2021? So first and foremost, Matt, Hallie, thank you so much for joining us. Matt, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Just pondering this question that really has no answer at this point. But, you know, it's something that we've talked about so much that it felt urgent and right to kind of have this discussion kind of in the public eye a little bit.
Hallie, how are you holding up?
Good. Yeah. You know, I think it's a question that a lot of us are fielding right now, you know, whether it's conversations in passing within Inside Lacrosse or just conversations in the greater lacrosse community. You know, I think there's still so many questions that certainly we don't have answers to, but, you know, situations that, you know, we're all starting to think about with lacrosse season just around the corner.
Hallie, how would you gauge your optimism that there will be a season in the spring?
You know, you go back and forth. You know, there has been fall sports, you know, many conferences and throughout all three divisions are not competing this fall, but many are. And, you know, so I think that I am optimistic lacrosse will be played this spring. It's a question of what it's going to look like. You know, will there be an NCAA tournament? Will there just be conference play? Will conferences announce shortly that they will not be playing at all? If that's the case, you know, I think that we're going to be hearing that sooner rather than later.
Matt, what do you think?
I'm mostly in the same boat. You know, I'd say I'm over 75% certain that a college lacrosse season is going to happen. Probably 80%, maybe even 85%. But will it look the same? Absolutely not. I'm 100% certain that it will look different and maybe even somewhat drastically different. You know, with some of the coaches that I've talked to and recent weeks for our fall series, you know, I've had one coach who is probably the most on the, you know, let's say negative end of the spectrum, say, you know, maybe a 50% chance that there's a season. Then I've had pretty much everyone else kind of saying it's going to happen, just not exactly sure what it's going to look like. So I'm kind of more in that category of it's going to happen. It's going to be different, but we'll have some college lacrosse.
So I would echo that, but I think that obviously, the devil's in the details. There are some people who care about certain aspects of these details where some of the things that we're about to share our opinions on might kind of render it as if we aren't optimistic that there will be a college season, or at least from their point of view, you know, particularly if you're a fan of a team in a particular conference or part of the country or whatever the case may be. One of the things that I am particularly interested in starting this dialogue with or around is, Matt, what would you set the over-under as the date that the first game is played, the first NCAA game in the spring?
I mean, I think March 1st is a good, like, over-under date, but I would definitely put it later than that as when we would expect lacrosse to be played. I definitely don't see the month of February. I think March 1st could kind of be maybe, like, a date of practice scrimmages. Maybe that's the first date of scrimmages and kind of games that actually count being played somewhere after that. And, you know, obviously the way that the season looks will dictate that a lot, but I certainly don't see it starting in the early phase that we're used to in terms of, you know, those February 1st, February 8th games or anything like that.
Hallie, circling back to your thought on the likelihood that a season will happen, what are you basing it on? What are the factors? I mean, obviously you referenced fall sports are being played in some conferences. Aside from that, or below that, so to speak, what are the other factors that give you some confidence?
You know, I think you draw confidence in that. And, you know, I think, you know, we did poll current Division I men's and women's coaches on a number of different topics. What did their fall ball look like? Were their teams returning to campus? What was their recruiting process with the class of 22? We also did ask them, you know, point blank, do you think a season will happen? And Kirsten Kimmel actually replied, you know, it's hard for me not to feel like we will have a season because our soccer team, our girls soccer team, you know, we have fall sports. So, you know, I think that you look at the ACC, you look at some of the conferences that are currently competing on the fall, you know, that's where I am optimistic. You know, but then you talk about, you know, you look at the Princeton men's and women's team. They have, I think the last I heard, the Princeton women's team, should a season happen, they'll have 11, 12 players. You know, I don't think they have a goalie on their roster. You know, I think the writing's on the wall that certain conferences likely won't have a season. Will those teams that are in the conference, will they be allowed to play? Will they not be allowed to play? What does this mean in terms of those athletes' eligibility? You know, there's so many questions, but I do think that we will see some sort of season. And to Matt's point, you know, I would even say maybe even starting in April. You know, you look at the way that a lot of colleges, universities have, you know, their first semester is ending a little bit earlier. Those students are coming home, you know, around Thanksgiving time. And some colleges, universities are starting earlier, or some are pushing it even back a little bit later, because they're getting rid of their spring break. You know, if it's really just a conference schedule and a bridge conference schedule at that, you know, we usually don't see conference play really take off until April. So are we looking at a late March through April, you know, shortened 4 to 6 week season? That's kind of where my mind is at right now.
And Matt, you know, obviously Hallie cited the responses to the survey feedback. You've had a lot more kind of direct anecdotal conversations than most have with coaches, with programs. What have you learned about the way in which this is kind of coming to fruition?
Yeah, Terry, I think that Hallie's overarching point there about, you know, there's sports being played right now in the fall. Most coaches I've talked to have said, well, they found a way to do it for these other sports. It seems to be going off, you know, I'll say reasonably well. So there's no way that they're going to just not do the spring sports. That seems to be kind of an overarching comment I heard. But I would definitely say that there's been, over the last, let's say, month, a sense of like there's that second half of the sentence that's like, well, if we don't have a season, that kind of has gotten added to conversations that I didn't feel like was there as much a month ago. You know, I think that has to do just kind of with this like overarching sentiment that, you know, the second wave or whatever you want to call it, is coming back. I think there's a little bit of fear that's kind of come in, and I'd be really curious to see what those survey results would be if you sent that survey now, as opposed to, you know, that I believe that was early to mid September that first survey went out. So, you know, I think that people kind of have that same opinion that Hallie does, that, you know, they found a way. It seems like sports are happening with, you know, if there are positives, they don't seem to be, you know, as much of a health risk as maybe people thought. But also, you know, I'm still a little bit worried about what's going to happen nationally just with the virus, you know, as its own, you know, public safety issue, that if it, you know, continues to grow and continues to get worse, maybe we're back in the same spot that we are in March. But that just kind of seems like a growing little sliver of negativity that's kind of at the end of all of these statements and conversations.
Well, I also think that you don't have to, I mean, any college football fan is watching Trevor Lawrence test positive or Wisconsin having to, you know, cancel their game against Nebraska and saying, is this going well? These games are happening. The Big Ten and other conferences started their seasons in mid to late October. So it seems as if progress is occurring, but there's also, you both have touched on this, like, the notion that it's happening because the momentum and public desire is so strong that it's just pushing through other types of decisions. When you overlay that with non-revenue sports and lacrosse particularly, you wonder which way it slices. Because on the one hand, you might say the scrutiny isn't as high as it is in football or, you know, soon to be basketball. And so as a result, maybe that lack of scrutiny makes it more likely that the games will occur despite the challenges. But the reward also isn't as high. So maybe that undercuts the likelihood that the games happen. And I just don't really know how to reconcile it, primarily because it does seem like it's going to be both a conference and university-based decision. And there just hasn't been very much consistency, not just conference to conference and college to college, but even within conferences and colleges where they reverse their decisions, as we've seen happen. When you're trying to predict on the basis of that type of landscape, just seems really, I don't know, precarious, tenuous.
Well, Terry, yeah, like there is the aspect of like, was football just too big to fail? And that's why it's happening. Lacrosse is not too big to fail. Lacrosse can, you know, frankly, like it sounds terrible and it hurts us to say this, but lacrosse can, they can just not have it and it doesn't hurt the NCAA. In the sense of the financial hurt, you know, there's not the big time TV contracts that football has or basketball has. You know, we saw how much revenue the NCAA lost because of March Madness. You know, those sports are too big to fail. Lacrosse isn't. Lacrosse can just be kind of sacrificed at the whim of those sports. So I definitely see what you're saying. I definitely think that there's the public image aspect that I think people are holding on to, that coaches are holding on to, that, hey, you know, the NCAA and these conferences made sure that these sports happened. You know, we know that we're not a revenue generating sport, but they're not going to take that hit in terms of the access, you know, the student athlete experience for these athletes as opposed to those athletes.
I think that's really logical, particularly relative to the idea of who lost a season already and how much more unfair is it to lose two seasons. Not only in the sense of just the individual, but also the compounding factor of roster construction, which we've already spoken so much about. I mean, Halle, that Princeton example is really dramatic. There are dramatic examples on the other end of the spectrum of these comparatively really large rosters because of the additional year of eligibility that was awarded. What do you think of the idea of coming back for a senior season, a fifth year, only to also lose that? I mean, not to put salt prematurely in anybody's wounds, but that seems like it would be a tough pill to swallow.
Yeah, I mean, it's devastating. I think about that all the time. You know, you look at the players that have come back with unfinished business in mind, and when they made the decision to come back, whether it be to enroll in a year postgraduate program or a two-year program, you know, you want it to all have been worth it. You know, whether or not these athletes get to compete this year, I know some are enrolled in two-year programs. So, you know, hopefully they would have the opportunity to use that year in additional. I do, you know, that's really when I think about if the 21 season doesn't happen, that's what I think about first. You know, those seniors that have elected to come back, many of them are paying for it. And, you know, will that have been worth it? Now, of course, they're paying for graduate degrees. Many of them are, you know, picking up an additional minor undergraduate. So in that sense, of course. But, you know, I think my biggest question is, you know, you mentioned roster size. You know, there certainly be the low end where Princeton has a number of student athletes that aren't even in enrolled this year, but then you look at some of these larger rosters, 40, close to 50 on the women's side, they're gigantic. And what if this college season doesn't happen or happens in some semblance of a way, you know, whether 4, 5, 6, 7 conference games are played and you're only playing in conference and there is a conference tournament, will the athletes largely, though, still get that year of NCAA eligibility as well? You know, will there be another blanket waiver? Now you're looking at athletes potentially having two additional years, and, you know, the 21 class is coming in hot. So I'm curious, like when we think about if it's happening, if it's not happening, you know, regardless of that, if these athletes are given another year of eligibility, what does that do to roster sizes? And of course, how does that affect the recruitment of the 2023 class in particular next fall?
Matt, what are your thoughts on this kind of like potential, I don't know what to call it. Like the cliches don't seem to fit. It's not necessarily like a vicious cycle. It's not really a carousel, but obviously the cascading effects, the dominoes, you know, as they continue to fall, do you feel like that plays a role in the decision, the decisions that get made? I mean, it seems such a stupid question to ask when you're talking about a global pandemic that, you know, has reached new heights in terms of total number of infections in the United States in the last week. It's a pittance, but at the same time, it's a huge part of so many people's lives, particularly people that are going to be listening to this podcast. So, you know, it's kind of the question that we're confronting it or confronted with. And so as a result, like one of the factors to me in the decision-making process has to be, all right, well, if we choose not to play a season this year, then now we're packing 6 grade years into a roster construction that's used to handling 4. Does that come into play? I don't know.
I mean, at the NCAA level, I don't know if that's like a consideration they can use. You know, that's just because it just varies so much from school to school that, like, you know, how do you make a policy that kind of and this is like one of the core problems that the NCAA has to face. You know, how do you make a policy that kind of is universal enough, but also deals with schools that are dealing with such varying levels of budgets, you know, facilities, capabilities, you know, just philosophies on athletics. You know, so there's a lot of different like things to consider. Certainly at the, you know, institution or conference level, I would see that more of a factor. You know, if I'm a university and, you know, I kind of put myself on the line and said to all my spring athletes last year, you know, we're going to do whatever you can so that you guys can come back. You know, I'm going to make sure that there's any sliver of hope of playing, that I'm going to be one of the universities that is playing in the 2021 spring. But, you know, kind of summing up some of the issues that Hallie brought to light there, you know, these eligibility questions are already kind of being decided right now. We just saw in the past week, you know, the NJCAA, the JUCO programs, they said that all student athletes in this academic year, so that includes the fall, winter, spring, will have eligibility relief for this year. So this is going to be essentially, if you play 2 years of JUCO lacrosse last year, that was cut short, assuming this coming year happens, when you play that, you will have not used any eligibility. Division III, just NCAA Division III, just kind of passed a similar ruling, so that, you know, any eligibility that is used in the 21 season is not going to count against you. So these eligibility things are already kind of being hashed out, and it's just going to lead to this cycle. I don't know, ultimately, you know, with the high school kids, you know, which is a very, very big concern. And, you know, if you notice anything that we tweet out about this, anything that the NCAA or NJCAA tweets out, you can be sure that the first 10 comments on that are about this exact issue. You know, obviously there's going to be a pinch. Coaches are going to have to make tough decisions about where they allocate their money. How can they fit players on their roster who want to be there, who are, you know, good student athletes, but, you know, hey, we just have X amount of seats on the bus. There's a finite number of people we can take. So these are kind of, you know, starting to happen. But I do feel like ultimately what happens is the rich get richer. And I mean that in kind of both aspects of, you know, the student athlete and the university. You know, a lot of these student athletes who are going to be taking advantage of these extra years of eligibility, and, you know, this is maybe more particular to D3 where there's not scholarships, you know, they have to be able to afford to go to college. You know, if they weren't planning on, you know, if they were already planning on, you know, spending money for 2 years of graduate school and now they get to play lacrosse, that's great. But, you know, how many families, how many, you know, just recent college graduates can just say, hey, I'm going to incur that expense for another 2 years just to play lacrosse? I don't know. It doesn't seem like that many. But if you're, you know, an amazing player, or if you're just kind of coming from a wealthy family where that doesn't really matter, that's an easier consideration for you. And on the flip side, if you're a university that, you know, has a full, at, you know, when we're talking about scholarship levels, has a full allotment of scholarships, has a university that's willing to pay the extra expenses for extra student athletes, or you have facilities that can handle as many student athletes, you're going to get these players. So really what it comes down to with the eligibility in my mind is this kind of rich getting richer mentality. And, you know, obviously if you can take advantage of it as a student athlete or as a program, that's within your right. Is it what the NCAA stands for? Is it for the good of the sport and good of athletics? Probably not.
Hallie, we've spoken about the NCAA. We've spoken about colleges, conferences. One thing that we haven't touched on is state governments and the role that they play in this. And it's particularly interesting in California, where there's a lot of limitations on who can play whom. And that was compounded by the recent news that Fresno State was dropping women's lacrosse as well. What are your thoughts on the fact that in certain parts of the country, there are nuanced challenges that programs are going to have to navigate if a season does happen?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of, you know, the other topic that we've discussed, even from an event planning discussion within, you know, within Inside Lacrosse. You know, I think that right now it's interesting. You know, I use the ACC as an example. Within our Fall All Access series, you know, we just checked in with Duke. We checked in with Notre Dame. We checked in with Syracuse. Those three programs are in very different circumstances and time together, simply because really the local guidelines and the state guidelines based on where those programs are. Throw Boston College into that mix. You know, I thought Beth Ann Mayer did a great job on her fall check-in with Stanford. You know, it's crazy to think how different each university is and college program is able to be together. You know, you look at, you know, I've coached players locally here in Connecticut that are currently enrolled at Johns Hopkins and Georgetown, and they're not on campus and they don't have any organized team practices whatsoever. They're fully online. And then you look at Duke and they're having full team practices, you know, full contact, they're scrimmaging. You know, you head up to Boston College and they just got on the field last week and they're in masks. And, you know, that's, it's interesting, you know, and that's kind of when we look ahead to a season and to play kind of the devil's advocate conversation, you know, the competitive equity of the NCAA, that's kind of one of their pillars that they pride themselves on. There's going to be such different allowances of what these teams are and are not allowed to do. And there's no competitive equity in that in preparation. You know, that's kind of when you look at Stanford and, you know, you mentioned, you know, the only non-conference teams that really fit the bill for their 2021 schedule were at the time of print, UC Davis and Fresno State. And now, of course, you know, we heard the unfortunate news that Fresno State will no longer field a women's Division I lacrosse program. That's huge for Stanford. You know, they were originally supposed to have games against Duke, Virginia, Richmond, Syracuse, Cornell. Understandably, that's not the case this year. But, you know, if there is a college season for Stanford, you know, the larger question is who can they play? Who are they going to play? And I think that a lot of programs and universities nationwide will face that question. And, you know, but I do think that, like Matt said, you know, if you're one of those coaches, you want to be able to provide your student athletes with something safely, of course. So, you know, I think that every coach out there, if given the green light from their athletic administration, they'll try to do something, whether truly their season is 1 to 2 road games, non-conference games, or a limited in-conference schedule of who you're allowed to play based on what state you're located in and what state you're allowed to travel to or which states are allowed to come to you. You know, when we talk about will a season happen at the top of the podcast, if one happens, it's going to look very different. And I think that coaches right now are just trying to figure out what it's going to look like. You know, in the fall access check-in with Duke, that's what Kirsten Kimmel said. You know, she said, it's kind of crazy. We're in October and I don't even know what and if my schedule is going to be in the spring. She's never been in that circumstance before.
Matt, Hallie touched on the differences in competitive balance, and I think that that topic kind of segues nicely into you play a season, you're crowned a champion. We know, or we don't know, but we can very likely assume that the championship field is going to be smaller than it typically is, the tournament field, on the basis of choices the NCAA has already made for fall sports and at the non-Division I level. To my knowledge, we haven't heard that the men's lacrosse or women's lacrosse brackets at the Division I level will be shrunk. But we did recently see news, and correct if I'm wrong, that Division III spring sport championships should be no greater than 75% their normal size. and the Division III women's bracket, again, I might be misremembering, but I'm pretty sure it's 48 teams. I'm pretty sure the men's bracket is 32, you know, which would suggest, obviously, 24 and then whatever 75% of 42 is. I apologize for not being able to do that math off the top of my head. I think it's probably 32-ish. 31, maybe 30. That being said, what's your expectation for what a championship, a tournament, is going to look like?
Wow, we're getting really into the hypothetical weeds here, but I love it. You know,
well, isn't that what everybody comes here for?
Well, the everyone should read my my all-in tournament, where every team just plays each other based on geography and who's left standing, basically.
No, not to interrupt. I can't wait to see where you go with this, but I would actually love that. So please continue. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, I mean, that's like the crazy outside-the-box idea derived from the basketball plan that seems like it, you know, was kind of dead on arrival. But, you know, more seriously, you know, obviously Hallie said the actual season schedule is going to look vastly different. You know, just anecdotally talking to a coach this weekend, he said, you know, hey, normally I'm thinking like, are we playing this game on Tuesday night or Wednesday night? Now we're just kind of in a holding pattern. You know, this part of the year, you know, they're kind of working out those finer details. Now they're just, we have no idea if this game is even logistically possible, if we're going to be legally allowed to do it or whatnot. So those conversations are happening and they are real. I could see a scenario in which, and one other like rumbling, and Terry, I know you've heard something similar about this, is, you know, there's going to be disparities between conferences and what they require from a testing and safety standpoint. And, you know, some, you know, rumblings, rumors have been kind of ACC and Big Ten kind of sharing some of those similar, more stringent requirements. So maybe those teams only play, you know, within themselves and each other and not any of the other conferences, you know, as one maybe possibility. And maybe most conferences just play their conference games. We've already seen the CAA as kind of, has been at least on the leading edge of planning for the spring, with the CAA, basically every spring sport team is going to make their championship. So, you know, their conference championship for men's lacrosse isn't going to be a four-team event anymore. Everyone's going to go and it's going to be held at Hofstra, and you know, that's how they're going to crown their champion. So you could have the scenario of a team doesn't win at all in the regular season and then wins that conference championship. What does that mean for, you know, crowning a champion? Well, and this is also assuming that all of the conferences play. You know, I hate to say this because none of us would like this in lacrosse, but you know, the NESCAC has been more conservative when it comes to this. You know, they were the kind of leaders that kind of got the ball rolling, but you know, we're the first to kind of commit to the decision to not play last spring. The Ivy League was kind of right there behind them. You know, keep an eye on those two conferences, and those are some really, really good teams. When you get to an NCAA tournament that's potentially going to be smaller, RPI is going to have to get thrown out the window if, you know, these teams aren't able to make a reasonable schedule. So are you left with a situation where basically any conference that plays just sends their champion to some sort of NCAA championship, and that's how the, you know, there's no at-large bids. That's how the champion is crowned this year. It seems like that's, you know, a reasonable guess at what a championship might look like, or is it kind of goes back to some, you know, even more loosely based championship where there's a committee that just picks the 12 best teams. You know, that would just be the most controversial meeting of all time. But is it something like that? You know, I kind of think that maybe it's going to be something like the former, where there's whatever conferences are playing, they make a champion. And, you know, if those conferences choose to do so, they can send their champion to some sort of postseason tournament.
Hallie, how would it strike you if it basically the NCAA tournament was just the automatic qualifier from each conference, as opposed to, you know, what we have traditionally seen in the Final Four, which is one or two conferences dominating and having a disproportionate number of teams that advance to, you know, the quarterfinals and the Final Four.
Yeah, you know, that's tricky and something that Matt and I spoke about. And of course, you know, we go down the rabbit hole of everything we've seen. And I'm like, well, if that was the case, you know, most recently, well, Northwestern won the most recent Big Ten tournament, which is crazy to think that Maryland wouldn't have even qualified under that guideline. And then, of course, you know, you look at North Carolina winning the ACC tournament, but BC beating them in the semis and going to their third straight NCAA championship. You know, it makes that conference tournament, you know, that much more important. But, you know, those coaches and athletes approach that like it is the NCAA tournament. It's do or die time. But, you know, certainly from a media standpoint, and again, so many hypotheticals, will this happen? Who knows? But we're down the rabbit hole, so let's just stay here for a second. You know, I think that it's covering and watching and being a spectator and certainly competing that much more exciting, you know, were that to be the case. And just it's crazy to think that if that were the way that the NCAA were to go with this, because I do agree, you know, you'd really have to throw out strength schedule, certainly RPI, out the window. But if that were to happen, it would just be crazy because there would be so much talent left at home within those power conferences that we do see get multiple bids. You know, certainly the ACC, the Big Ten, we've seen the Pac-12, Ivy League, CAA, they have annually and again, you know, multiple, you know, ACC, you know, four or five plus teams annually in the NCAA tournament. So it would just be wild to think. But yeah, I guess that's what all we can do right now. The what if conundrum.
Matt Kinnear, what is a rabbit hole, and have you ever had to fill one or fallen into one?
I have not, but I do have moles in my front yard. So like I'll walk in my front grass and just like there'll be spots where like my foot will just randomly fall in. So I don't know if anyone has any advice for getting rid of moles. I have a neighbor who has some sort of thing you put in the ground and it releases some sort of sonic waves or something like that. But now we're even deeper down a rabbit hole when we're talking about our maintenance at our houses.
It's actually had goofers. Our gophers and moles, the same thing. They're not. We have a huge gopher, and I honestly, I always put, if we ever have anyone in our backyard, I put like lacrosse cones around the hole so nobody falls in. Okay, now we're totally off topic.
Well, I think it does represent what this conversation will typically devolve into until we get closer to a hoped for start to the college lacrosse season and what follows subsequently, which is probably, based on the way the college football season has gone, going to be just as unpredictable as the path to getting there. So, well,
Terry, can I add one thing?
Well, I was just about to call for final thoughts. So of course you can.
Well, that's perfect. You know, we're having this conversation that, I mean, it veers on ridiculous at some points, but these are like, I mean, nothing that I have said has been like not discussed with me, you know, with someone of, you know, significance within the sport. It's not like these may seem ridiculous, but it's not that crazy. People were just kind of talking things out, and that's what we're here for. But also, like, you know, we're not talking about this because we have any sort of rooting interest in the season being derailed in any way. Like, we at Inside Lacrosse would love nothing more than, you know, there being fall ball tournaments right now, there being, you know, real games that we can watch right now, real practices we could go to. You know, normally I've gone to probably, you know, 10 to 15 different teams' practices during the month of October in past years. I haven't done that this year. You know, as much as we maybe rail against February lacrosse and early season lacrosse, you know, we want a full schedule of games. We want there to be as many opportunities for these student athletes to play, to these universities to represent themselves, for the sport to get in front of people that are in the stands and on TV, because that's what's going to, you know, make the sport grow, is people seeing the sport. So we're not talking about this because we want you know, because we're like, you know, masochists who don't want the sport to grow, or we don't want to see lacrosse in the spring. We would want nothing more than a full lacrosse season with, you know, a champion that is crowned at the most, you know, legitimate circumstances possible. So I know that we're going to kind of maybe take some flack about, you know, focusing too much on this, but we just want lacrosse back. So we're having these conversations because we desperately want it, not because we want to see it go away.
Hallie, anything you'd like to close with?
No, you know, certainly we want lacrosse back. We want it to be safe to play. You know, I think that's the biggest thing. Thing to add.
All right. Well, we appreciate everybody checking out this edition of the Inside Lacrosse podcast. If you like what you heard, which I don't blame you if you don't, because it's not a happy topic to talk about. But if you did appreciate the conversation, hit the review button, five stars, say something nice about us in the comments, and tell a friend, because we want more people to listen to these podcasts. Hit us up on Instagram at Inside Lacrosse at IL Women, and Twitter at Inside_Lacrosse at IL Women. And we'll be back later in the week with more Inside Lacrosse podcasts.
Inside Lacrosse podcasts, the source of the sport.